pleasure to actually present you Alt F4. He's actually doing a talk about the new endeavors about IPv6 and a lot of other things. I know him already quite a while, and he's actually talking also a lot about DNS. He's writing a book about it. Never say I said it. So it will probably be his next talk again. And also he likes to talk about airplanes, but I need to have to warn you, if he starts, he never stops with it. But give a really big applause for Alt4F and the IPv6 talk.
Okay, hello everyone. So I will start with a generic question. What are your experience with IPv6? Okay. Who found it enjoyable? Okay. Who hated it? I see you. Who has no idea what I'm talking about? Ah, okay. So, everyone knows an IP, the IP that you see in movies. Generally, we speak about IPv4. The problem is, this is coded on 32 bits. Turns out that when they created the internet, it was some experimental project, like a few servers, a few universities maybe. And 4 billion addresses. We are never going to use that. And then people started to actually connecting, and that became a problem. And they saw it really fast. So now we have IPv6, which has many, many, many more IPs because it's coded on 128 bits, which is enough to have 666 billion addresses per grain of sand on Earth's crust for 1.6 kilometers in depth. Should be enough for the foreseeable future, I think. So, first a little bit of history. As I said, we first started with RFC 791, which is IPv4, September 1981. That's a long time ago. And the IPv6 RFC 2460 arrived in December 1998, 1 year after the birth of yours truly. So back then, it was still kind of experimental. It took a long time to become production ready. And they had an IPv6 world trial day. Cloudflare was involved and a lot of other companies where they were thinking, okay, let's deploy IPv6 for a day and see how it works. That was in January 2011, and 2011 is an important year because that was also the year that IANA distributed its last /8 IPv4 block. After that, gone. So we continued to consume that /8 block until there was none left. And that happened on 25th of November 2019 when RIPE-NCC told, we are out. We don't have more IPv4s anymore. You can still get some. Sometimes RIPE-NCC finds a prefix. Oh, a company went bankrupt. We took the prefixes back. Now you have to clean the reputation of these IPv4 blocks. Good luck. So, where are we today? Because a lot of people I heard told me, okay, IPv6, that's a small little thing, right? We don't have it widely deployed. Well, for ISPs, you can consider that IPv6 is widely available on mobile. In fact, you have some ISPs that have almost only IPv6 on mobile, and then NAT it to the outside from IPv6 to IPv4, because no one does port forwarding on IPv4 on mobile, so why would you even need IPv4 on mobile? You have more and more ISPs that also give you non-deactivable IPv6 on home routers. The Belgium National Carrier does that. You are not happy with V6, you call them, they will tell you, okay, that's sad. Anything else? So they also started to do carrier-grade NAT because, well, you don't have IPs anymore. So if the NAT of your house is not sufficient enough, now they can NAT the entire street. If you want to do port forwarding, yes, you can. It won't work because it's NATed even above. And when you need to troubleshoot something like that, it's also very bad. And the prices of IPv4 prefixes are going up. So the price to get your full-stack IPv4 at home is also going up. At the time of this talk in Belgium, if you want a full stack IPv4 and you want it static from Proximus, it will cost you 35 euro per month, per IP. You have to really want it. So a lot of people thought, yeah, but it did not go that far. Well, think again, because recently the graphs went up, and we are almost at 50% traffic on the internet that is IPv6. These are the stats from Google. So the traffic that is going to and from Google, at this point, 50% of the world traffic, almost, is IPv6. If you look at a country map, you can see interesting patterns. For example, you can see India has a much better IPv6 support than many other countries, and you see France getting out of it really, really, really bright, because things happened recently that I will come to in the talk. And the United States, well, some people thought United States, yeah, it never happens. They are at 56%. So it's already quite significant there. With regards in Europe, you see that Germany and France are the leaders. Belgium is a little bit behind. Belgium was one of the top players, and then nothing happened anymore. So this is going to continue to progress because things happened. We now have regulations. Germany has new procurement laws. If you want to buy equipment for a public establishment, you will need to have IPv6 support capability on the device. It needs to be shipped with it. That doesn't mean you need to deploy IPv6, but it sets a framework for the future. Czech Republic, they went a little bit harder. So they want IPv6 deactivated on the 6th of June, 2032. So what they say is, all our public services will be on IPv6. We will push the ISP so that they are ready. And when we have support 100% in 2032, just disable IPv4. We don't need it anymore. For the Netherlands, they want to. They are already pushing with IPv6 in the new public networks. And at this point, well, some networks you cannot really enable it, but you have to justify it. And it's not just, I did not want to. You need to actually justify why you did not enable it. For France, it's even different. In 2021, 5G happened. And the regulator in France told, oh, you want part of the spectrum for 5G? You need to have IPv6 enabled on your mobile network for the 31st of December, 2021. There was an ISP that did not have plans. On the 30th of December, 2021, one day before, they enabled it. In France, no IPv6, no 5G for you. For Belgium, there are conversations behind closed doors. The regulator is, we don't really want to do regulations, so please have plans, or we will have to regulate. This is a threat. This is clearly a threat. So it will also move soon. For Norway, IPv6 also became mandatory for the public services. And for the United States, they also have a mandate from the White House that actually dates a few years ago, where they say, okay, we need to push this thing because it's actually becoming a problem. So, where are the problems now? Enterprise. The enterprises, it's a special case. So, for the enterprise, the good of the internet is not a good enough reason to implement IPv6. They don't care. The sanity of your network engineers is also not a good reason to enable IPv6. Google isn't faster on it, and we have no business case. Also, it costs money. So we'll see about the money and the business case. Once upon a time, there was a public transport company, and they had network engineers, network architects, and managers, like every company, and they said, we will not implement IPv6. It is too complicated, we need training, we don't want to mess with that, and there is no business case anyway, we don't need it. And then suddenly, at some point, the public transport company decided to buy brand new electric buses, like the ones you have with the USB charger on the side, the air conditioning inside, everything perfect. They can charge at the terminus, they can even regulate the power grid because they have smart charge. Yeah, speaking about smart charge, the smart charge is using a norm that is called VDV261. VDV261 is the German implementation of ISO 15118, which is the protocol to connect the vehicle to the grid. I did not read that norm because it's 240 Swiss franc and I did not feel to pay for it, so I read the VDV norm instead. And what does the VDV norm specify? A basic prerequisite for using the VAS is an encrypted communication between the vehicle and the charging station using TLS. This communication must be enabled via IPv6 network. and then specify the non-need. IPv6 capability is mandatory for the backend, in particular for the network technology between the charging station and the backend. So, if you are the manager at this company and you're like, yeah, I don't know, I do not want it. Okay, upper management is currently in the elevator. They're approaching you at high speed. They have questions. You do not want to be the person that replies why a 25-year-old standard was not implemented on your network because you did not feel like it and now they cannot have their smart charge. On another note, you also have other business applications that have been in place for much longer. So Eurocontrol Aldi system. So this, if we talk legacy, this dates from back of to the Telex days. It was used to exchange flight plan information and handoff information from airplanes from one country to the other between the air navigation service providers. Telex is not really used anymore. The structure of the message is still the same, but these days we exchange it over IPv6. This is an extract from a public document from Eurocontrol that dates from 2008. This has been in place for more than 15 years now. So they have a public, they have an IPv6 range that has been dedicated to them, and Eurocontrol then splits it into /48s. You can ask for as many as you want, and they connect every single ANSP with that, so that way we can exchange the flight information. If you have taken a commercial flight in the last 15 years in Europe, your flight plan data was exchanged over IPv6. So that's for the business case. Let's talk about the money. So AWS came around a little time ago and said, yeah, now you will pay for full stack IPv4 per month. Some people got surprises. They saw the bills and that was not good. So the other cloud provider noticed. So now you have Hetzner doing it. You also have Microsoft that is doing it. But for Microsoft, it's a little bit strange of a situation because you think, oh, Microsoft is trying to push IPv6. Do they, though? Because there is another thing that is owned by Microsoft that is notorious for not having IPv6, and that is GitHub. So the problem with GitHub, you remember the graph, the map of earlier with India that has approximately 70% IPv6 support. There is currently a conversation on GitHub actions, I think, like the topics where you can discuss thing. I'm following this thread, and I have 539 messages in this thread since I started following it. It ranges from something of, it ranges from people saying, we don't need IPv6, IPv4 works well, to people that say, why is there not IPv6? I'm in India, I cannot access GitHub because carrier grade NAT is so violent that it's inaccessible during most of the day. So now this is an accessibility problem. But I guess it's just Microsoft. They forgot. Like, it's not important. It's not like they sold a system that could basically replace GitHub that has dual stack support. Oh, wait. Turns out they do. So in this case, Microsoft is kind of playing with and against you. They are making money off the entire situation, basically, because for cloud providers, it's a dilemma. Let's just say that for cloud providers, IPv6 gives you the possibility of having IP, meaning that you can self-host stuff, meaning decentralization. They do not want that. The situation of, we have all the IPv4s, you want to be on the internet, come to us, it's your only way. They like that very much. That makes a lot of money for them. Yet at the same time, they are also running out of IPv4. And at the same time, well, if the competitor is making money out of it, we might as well also do money out of it. So that's for the server part, for enterprise. Now we have for the laptops and the access devices. Well, a lot of things happened because a lot of people forgot that IPv6 evolved since the last time we tried it 10 years ago. It became much better. So now we have two technologies that change it a lot, IPv6 mostly. That is basically a way of accessing the IPv4 network over IPv6 only network. If you have an iPhone, an Android, or any Apple devices connected to the Y2025 network with the Y credentials, you are currently running IPv6 only with that enabled. You can access on V4 over V6. And the second thing was API eyeballs, because Some people say, oh, I implemented IPv6. And then the server does not reply on IPv6. It has IP, but it's not listening to the socket on IPv6. So you have to wait for it to time out, meaning that the user is not happy about it because it took 30 seconds for me to open that web page. Let's just disable IPv6. The API eyeballs will basically send the request over IPv6, then wait a few milliseconds, send the second request over IPv4, and whichever one comes back first is the one that gets used. So what do we have right now? We have the IPv4 costs money. The IPv6 mostly is the thing. Regulations and norms are pushing it, so we are advancing, progress is happening. And we have widespread software support for most things. So what is currently holding us back? Well, the sad reality is most people aren't net nerds, people in technology. A lot of us have had to deal with the social pressure of doing stuff that most people do not do on a regular basis, developing stuff, etc. So we kind of were swimming in our own pool. This ended up in a situation where we've kind of developed a mindset. We know how it works, and we don't really want to change that because it works. Like, I don't want to change it. And a lot of people are not in networking, and even the guys that are in networking are not necessarily on the IP stack of networking. So most people, okay, I tested it once 10 years ago, it was terrible. It's still terrible, why would it change? You also have the mentality of IPv4 is good enough for myself. It is true. You can control your LEDs with IPv4 at your home, etc. It would work. But this is not your own network. We are talking about IPv6 for the internet. Yes, you can do whatever you want inside your own network. You can have even IPX if you want in your own network. But for the internet, you have to consider that too. And then you have the last ones that say, oh, but NAT hides me. NAT is security, it hides me. Yeah, sure, I know your house. Don't believe for a second that your ISP doesn't know who you are because you have NAT. That's the first thing. The second thing, there is privacy extension on most devices these days. So yes, I know where the house is based on the IP. If I'm the ISP, I still don't know what device you used because it's masked. This mentality of NAT hides me has ended up with some people using a lot of VPN services to hide their identity and stuff like that. And VPNs seeing that as, oh, IPv6 is dangerous. We should not put IPv6. So a lot of commercial VPN services that you can rent these days have pages on their wiki. How to disable IPv6? Not at the interface level, at the kernel level. So basically, for your stack to work, I need to break my network stack at the kernel level. This is not okay for the. Yeah, it's not okay for the general public because you know that once this is deactivated, people will not go out of their way to reactivate it. If what you're selling is a VPN, this is your product. If your product in 2025 does not support IPv6 while it is literally selling internet, that says a lot about the product and about how much you care about the product. Last thing we have to remember is what we say does matter. A lot of people, like I said, have experienced IPv6 in its early stages, when I haven't even touched a keyboard yet. And yes, it was terrible back then, because it was the starting stuff. And people have kept that mindset. So when you have regulations that come into place, or requirements that come into place, and you have a manager that says, hey, maybe you should investigate this, and the first reactions he gets from all these engineers is, oh no, it's terrible, I tried it a long time ago, I do not want to do it, it's bad. Yeah, okay. A normal manager would say, okay, so it's a legal requirement, we'll push the deadline as much as we can. But if you already touched it a little bit, then recently, you would know that it's not exactly like it was before, there are things that got much better. The user experience in general is much better than it was before. And if you already changed your mindset and saying, okay, we can try, you can have a much smoother transition. Because if you're in front of the wall, like the public transport company I was explaining about earlier, if you are close to the wall and now you need it for yesterday, that's not a situation you want to be in. So, that was the talk. Are there any questions?
If people have some questions, just go to the microphone, if you have some.
Yeah, thank you for a talk. At the beginning you show a map of Europe with the color how IPv6 is deployed, and there are some big islands like Spain or Denmark or Poland. Do you know why IPv6 is not deployed in that countries?
It depends on every single country. It also depends on how big of an access they had to IPv4 resources a long time ago. So if your country was later on the internet, they had less IPv4 resources, so they have more urgency to move to IPv6. Belgium, for example. We were late to the game. We had few IPv4s. Okay, we need to push IPv6 earlier. But in other countries where, oh, we have plenty, we do not care. Okay. They don't have the incentive.
Right. As the family tech nerd who can solve all magical tech problems, or tech problems in magical ways, what is the... Because a lot of device, poorly coded devices do actually have issues on IPv6 networks. I recently had one where I had to disable IPv6 broadcasting on the entire network to get it to function. So is there anything else that can be done in that situation, or is it just that you have to replace the device?
It's not necessarily only the device can be faulty. The router could also be faulty. That can happen with some ISP boxes.
Not
actually
unlikely in our case, yeah.
So the thing is, you have to think it, how would you solve it in the IPv4 world? If you had a device that keeps breaking IPv4 for the entire network, mm-hmm. would you disable IPv4 or would you try to dig it further to try to troubleshoot it?
No, the device was broken by IPv6 being present on the network. So in that case,
I'm curious about what device you're talking about. If you want, we can speak about it after the talk.
Let's do that.
Okay.
I'm curious about not on IPv6, because I know it exists, but it's not really deployed. Do you know a little bit about the status?
Whew, that's a big subject. There are many ways of doing NAT with IPv6. So you can NAT. There is the same thing as RFC 1918 in IPv6, where you have address space that has been reserved only for private use. It is not used that much. You can technically NAT that to the outside and map it to IPv6. It is not widely used because we don't need it that much. So we don't need that. Then you have the NAT towards the IPv4 world, which is complicated. You have multiple methods of doing it. And then you have the opposite version of the NAT, where you can have a V4-only network that gets access to IPv6. Now, that has a problem, as in the pool of IPv6, it's much larger than the pool of IPv4. At some point, you are going to run out of mapping. So there are many technologies. It's a complicated topic. If you want, you can also come after the talk, and we can also discuss it deeper, because there are many things to say about it.
So from a consumer perspective, I live in Germany, so as you can imagine, the ISP situation is not fantastic. And Vodafone allegedly supports IPv6 very well, but in practice, you just end up with no routes randomly all the time, and their technical support obviously has no idea what you're talking about. So is there any advocacy for fixing this problem in existing networks? Because it's not something that I can see being fixable by the individual end users, even if they're technically savvy.
So if the problem is at the ISP level, like it would be with IPv4, if you have problems with IPv4 routing and it breaks, your ISP has to fix it. You cannot do much about it, apart of raising tickets and stuff like that. At this point, we have to see exactly how the regulations are written in Germany. Is internet connectivity considered with IPv6 and IPv4 in mind, or do they consider that, oh, you ping 8.8.8.8, you have internet access, goodbye. How is the regulation written? That we have to see into detail, but if the problem is on the ISP side, that's basically the only thing you can do. If you really want IPv6, and the ISP does not do it well, there are other ways of mounting tunnels that go to your own network, and that way you can escape to another way and get IPv6 access that way. That's also possible.
I use rsync.net, so tunneling like terabytes is not so nice.
Yeah.
I've discussed IPv6 with friends that basically ended up saying, well, it works for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true? If not, do you have a good counter argument?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It does work for consumers. But not only for consumers. So the thing is, it's an IP technology. You send packets, you receive packets. It works. So depending on how your software is implemented, if it works for customers, there is no reason it wouldn't work for companies.
I had a question about the switch to IPv6, because a lot of hardware is going to become waste.
Yep.
Because of the old hardware doesn't have IPv6 support. So people are just going to throw away the old stuff.
That's sadly true. For example, the ESP8266, the first versions of them currently have SDK support for IPv6. The problem is it has so few memory that you might actually lose functionality over it. That being said, these devices can be repurposed to not necessarily need access to the internet, but access to your local network. I'm not talking about disabling IPv4 on your local network. There you can still use your LEDs. But for the broader internet, it might create problems in the future. That being said, it's not even only old hardware. You can still find plenty of brand new IoT stuff that would have great use of IPv6 that does not have it implemented. And this is sadly true. Well, most of things can be updated through software to enable it, because the modern hardware, even on low-cost IoT stuff these days, is very powerful. But the legacy stuff, you might end up locked at some point with regard to internet access.
And I had a second question regarding legislation. I thought at some point that it would be wise to have an EU law saying by, let's say, 2030, 35, you need to have IPv6 in all the devices.
From what I know, EU is working already internally to try to push it. I did not say it was successful, but they are trying to work for that, but every country still has authority on what he does with regards to that. So they can publish guidelines. They cannot force the countries to say, okay, you disable IPv4 by that time. At this time, it's not how it works.
Hi. One of the larger broadband and mobile ISPs in the Netherlands, Odido, has no IPv6 at all. And it's kind of terrible. How common is that, and what makes ISPs change so that we can throw the right stones at Odido to make them do IPv6?
So what makes ISP change? Regulation, money. That's basically what makes them change. So yes, we also have some ISPs, actually some sub-brand of some national ISPs also in Belgium that do not support IPv6. That was what I was talking about with the regulator that came to them and said, hey, you have plans? We would not want to regulate or anything. So things will move at some point because they also feel the pinch with the cost. But the only thing you can do as a customer, if they do not enable it, is going to another ISP, basically.
Hi. Half a comment, half a question about this. Why don't companies use IPv6 internally? I mean, we've been talking a lot about consumers, but for example, as a company, I'm getting a box with a computer in it. There's a MAC address for the computer, and I get a DHCP assignment for my V4 IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the MAC address? For the DHCP V6, it took 10 years or something to convince the standards people for IPv6 to do MAC-based assignments. And even now, half the software in the world does it via random IDs, via weird stuff like using the other MAC address of the other interface on that one interface and stuff like that, which makes it very, very hard for company people to use IPv6 because, well, I have this brand new device, I want to assign a name, a address, stuff for it, and I don't know what to do because it does random stuff and I have to put it on an installation network, configure the device, and then only then I can use it within my company because other than at home, I do care about the address and the name and stuff like that. So when even the standards people and the software people don't really care about that use case, how do you see enterprises doing that unboxing, MAC address scanning stuff, being able to do it anytime soon?
Because it's not going to happen overnight that everything is compatible. I had the opportunity to talk with a manufacturer CTO about that implementation because the IPv6 implementation on their boxes was terrible. And he told me, yeah, okay, but at this point, the customers are not really demanding for it. So it's on the back stove. We'll do it one day if we get demand for it. So how do you get the demand? Something happens, and a regulation of something. Okay, now you have it here. It would be nice if we had it somewhere else. If enough customers ask for it, they will actually start to care and read the RFCs to get into a thing where you can anticipate stuff. Right now, they're not really doing it.
The question wasn't really about the companies delivering devices. The question was more about the standards people delivering RFCs that take into consideration how you can do stuff in a company.
Yeah, I know that there is a lot of talking about the at the IETF, where they want to have more people involved with it that can give real-world experience back to them. Because again, it's a chicken and an egg problem. Which came first? Do you have the people with the experience that give the feedback, or do you have the people that write the norms that did not really try it into the company? The only thing we can do is beta test, basically. It will take time. It will not be done tomorrow, but eventually.
About this functionality. So I did IPv6 back in 2000 with a project called Linux AP, where we wanted to have a mesh network for Wi-Fi, pre-Freifunk era and pre-OpenWRT era. So I took the patches for BusyBox and Linux and had the Linux 2.4.20 with IPv6 working. And the main feature we wanted to have was the IPv6 address with the MAC address. The problem with that is you can identify in your network, you have a MAC, or this guy has an iPhone, this guy has a Samsung, whatever. So it raised some privacy questions on if you have the list of all the IP addresses in the network. You can basically say this is a list of all the devices that you guess that are used. So it has a privacy problem.
Yeah, but if you are the ISP, you also have that list in IPv4 because you know what is connected to your network. And at the same time, these days we have privacy extension. I did not really go into details about how the privacy extension work, but it is not based on your MAC address anymore when you get an IPv6. So yes, you know there is a device. You don't know what device it is. And some even have the privacy extensions with rotating IPv6s. So when you reconnect, it won't be the same IPv6 that you get back. So you cannot even establish a pattern on that thing.
There are already also some questions online. So if you Signal Angel, ask them over there to Arnold.
I've gotten one question. I'll read it to you. How does the exposure of the real MAC address of the devices due to the use of neighbor discovery in IPv6 impact the security and privacy of users, especially for those who value the protection of their personal data? What are the disadvantages of this situation, and what measures can be taken to mitigate these risks?
Privacy extension, that was the basically the same reply as the same as the previous question.
Yeah, I'm not the expert here, so I'm just reciting the question. Let's see if...
May I answer that one?
What?
May I answer that one?
Sure.
Yeah. Neighbor discovery is like ARP in IPv4. You have an Ethernet or similar network where you have the MAC address, that's the layer 2 address that is used, and this will always be used and visible within this network. It doesn't change whether your level 3 protocol is IPv6 or IPv4, and this neighbor discovery protocol is just a replacement for the ARP protocol for IPv4. So the privacy properties are exactly the same. You can always see the MAC addresses because you are in a Ethernet-like network. You can't do anything against that. This will always be like that.
Absolutely. As long as you're in the same broadcast domain, you can identify the MAC address of the device.
What?
Hi. Once upon a time, we were told that there was a need for maybe about 4 computers in the world, and IPv4 had 4 billion addresses, which was about enough for each computer to have a billion addresses each. I'm sure at one point we thought that there was just this absolute infinite address space in the IPv4 pool. Do you think we'll fall into the same trap again with IPv6, where it's not so much there's a limited number of addresses, but we just spaff them away so much that we end up running out?
Yeah, so there is someone next to you that that has spoken a lot about this.
Let me give you a little bit of an example of you will never ever run out of IPv6 addresses. And I joke about when I present about this, you will get a lifetime stroopwafel supply if you do. But just to give you an example, so if I give everybody here in this room 10 million addresses, so a second, I give you 10 million addresses, 10 million addresses, 10 million addresses. This is the Oprah Winfrey. Everybody gets 10 million addresses. So then, /64, play with me. How long do you think that one single /64 is, by the way, 14.8 quintillion addresses is in a /64. How long does it take to exhaust this one /64? How many years? Just humor me for a second.
I'll be honest, I have no idea.
That's fine. So Noah, just for the streaming, he said, Nicole, I don't know. By the way, Nicole's my name. No idea. 58,494 years. Okay, for the nerds in the room, I did not do the leap years, but that's only 200 years less. So, however, that's a /64. So, of course, you don't do... So, more normally in branches, you do minimum of /48 and slap those ISPs that give less. So... of 3.8 billion years for 10 million addresses per second. So it's totally insane, and I wrote a blog a couple of years ago, because every time when I speak to people, they say, but I will run out. I said, no, you will not run out. Do not be afraid to give a /64 to a person that needs 5 addresses. Just give them the whole /64, 18.4 in quartillion. Have fun with it. Choose whatever you like. So don't be afraid. leave your legacy thinking, because legacy IP, it is IPv4. Leave it at home and just, you know, free. So 3.8 billion for /48. So, and you know where to find me if you love stroopwafels.
And actually, it's that insane to the point that there was a project a few years ago where someone did put an IPv6 Christmas tree on the internet. So they did put a Christmas tree into a data center, into a rack, with a webcam pointed at it. And it was playing Jingle Bells on loop, and you could just ping every single LED with the RGB code in the end of the color of the LED you wanted to it. They had to stop after the second year when their transit provider called and said, "Hey, we have 160 gigabits per second of ICMPv6 traffic going your way. This is a problem. Could you please fix?"
Hi, I've got a small question. Let's assume you are a private person or a small company, and you get some internet access from some provider, and the provider provides you one IPv4 address, then you normally would use some kind of NAT to hide your IPv4 NAT, to hide all the machines inside of your net. So you can do this for a couple of weeks, and then you probably will notice that the internet line to your provider will not be that stable. For whatever reason, something crashes at their side, and normally people tend to then just book a second uplink, and the router that's also doing the NAT is clever enough to switch the uplink to the uplink that is working. So how can you receive some comparable situation if you have IPv6 uplinks? Because the machine inside of your network does probably have the, let's call it, wrong address for the working uplink.
This is a very good question, and I actually asked it myself multiple times.
Did you find a solution?
There are solutions. Okay. So the initial problem is that initially it was never planned that you get just one IPv4 in your on your internet box. That was never the design. So this is a leftover from the legacy of IPv4. That being said, NAT exists in V6 too. So in case you actually need to switch over that way and you have two customer lines, you can always, it will be dirty but it will work, NAT to IPv6 to the other link. That being said, if you go on a more office FTTO or something like that, there is also a way to tell the ISPs, either I authorize you to announce this prefix and route it back to me.
Yeah, but they will never do it for private. Hmm? They will probably never do it for private.
To a company they will, but for a private person, no.
As long as you grant them not 20 euros but 500 per month, they will probably do it. But
That's much more expensive. So you, on the cheap end, you still have NAT V6 available for that sort of things, but you also have most ISPs that offer a cellular backup on their links for that sort of things. You're still dependent on the same ISP, so. Not great, but it exists.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, ULA can help here, but you can also NAT the IP addresses you got from one ISP. You can NAT anything into anything if you want.
Are there still more questions? One and two and... What a great group effort it was, actually. Yeah, give a big applause for L4F.